is Emily Wright, Tech Editor and Head of Special Projects of EG, and we're back. We're back with episode 2 of We're Still Here. And we are still here, very much. And I'm here not alone again, which is nice, particularly in these times of isolation. I'm joined by Tim Burke, our Deputy Editor, and Jess Harold, who is our Deputy Legal and Professional Editor. Thank you both so much for joining me today. How are you?
Doing good.
Yep, very well, thank you.
Excellent. So a couple of things to mention. First is an apology that we don't have all of our recording equipment delivered to us quite yet. Tim, you've got yours there, which means that you'll sound great. I will sound like I'm at the bottom of a swimming pool again. But we should have all of the recording equipment with us by next week. I think there's been a rush on that sort of thing. So we've had our delivery pushed back. So apologies for the sound quality. But we are still here. And our first We're Still Here podcast was really popular, which is exactly what we wanted. We, not just for us, but for our listeners. We wanted to let everybody know that we're still out there and sort of helping bring everybody together in what is a very difficult time still. I can't believe that it was a week ago that we last recorded this podcast, because it feels like about 6 months ago. So much has changed. It was hard to believe that so much could change. But we are now obviously in a full lockdown. And I just wanted to see how Tim and Jess, you guys were dealing with that. Tim, let's start with you.
I have found this week pretty tough, I'm not going to lie. And I think that is largely because both of my kids are now at home as well. So over that first week, which, as you say, it already feels like a lifetime ago, I felt like I'd got into a certain rhythm of working, and I was adjusting to a sort of new normality. And now having the two boys in the house and out of school has just thrown that into complete disarray. So it's changed the dynamic of the whole house. They're running me ragged. I just walked upstairs and my four-year-old was hiding in our laundry basket at the top of the stairs. He jumped out and roared. And I think I actually screamed. It scared the life out of me. So this could finish me off over this couple of weeks. We're all adjusting. I keep reminding myself that it's this is a new world for them as well. They've had their own rhythms that they're used to in terms of school life and friends they want to see. So suddenly it's a bit of a change to be stuck at home every day and have mum and dad nagging them about the schoolwork that they thought they were escaping from. So, I mean, I'm trying to be as kind as I can and help us all adjust to that. I think we're all just getting used to a new way of living for the moment, aren't we?
We are indeed. Jess, how are you finding it?
I've kind of got the opposite experience to Tim, that I don't have any children back in the home this week, but I do have a teacher who has set up a remote classroom upstairs, which is interesting. So that's posed its own challenges.
This is a teacher that lives in your household already, not just a teacher.
That's right. I haven't adopted a teacher. This is my wife, who is a largely sixth form teacher. So it's mainly been A-level and GCSE classes that she's been doing things with, and it seems to be like a combination of actual learning and a bit of fun as well. She came running downstairs earlier on to say, I need a person, because they were doing this thing where everyone on the team call had to go and find a person and bring them to the camera, which seemed a bit contrary to social distancing policy, but there we go. For me, it's been quite interesting, because I work from home 3 days a week, usually, sometimes even 4 days a week. So it's been less of an adaptation for me to get into the sort of routine of working from home every day. But I have started to notice it is different. I mean, simply because outside of work, you don't have the things that structure your week. So today, this morning, I suddenly realized, oh, I need to go and put the bins out, because it's bin day, and you just sort of lose track of what day it is.
Yeah.
I found it quite interesting how at the very beginning of this process of everyone working from home, that people, it seemed to be such a huge thing for people, and people went very quickly to talking about the potential mental health implications. And I can kind of understand that with the, it's not solely, you know, working from home, it's being home in the evening and weekends and the whole thing. So I can understand that a bit. But for me, my move from working 5 days a week in London to largely working from home was done partly with mental health in mind, to be honest. So I kind of enjoy the process of working from home and all the advantages that brings, whether it is occasional interruptions from pets, or the chance to have the food and drink that you want when available to you, and just the, you know, the working in a more personalized environment, because obviously, you know, we all work in, or many of us work in, quite soulless offices where you're not allowed to display much in the way of individuality, or if it's hot desking, you don't really have your own space. So I think it can be nice to work. You know, I noticed through speaking to people that people seem to be with the same background every time that we speak to each other on our team meetings. So that, you know, the people have clearly designated a comfortable working environment at home. And I think once the period of adjustment has happened, it may well be that, you know, a few weeks down the line, that people might want to start looking at the mental health impact of actually forcing people to go back into an office 5 days a week. They might find that that's as much of a challenge as making this shift to home working has been.
I mean, that's a really interesting point. And I think that there's a lot of chat going on at the moment around the office and what the office represents. And while I don't think for a minute this will signal the end of the office, I think the opposite. I think people really crave that social interaction. As you say, I think it will certainly change the way the office works and what the expectations of the office are. As everybody has been forced into the same position here, everybody's working from home. And we'll be talking about a bit more about that, I think, in a couple of weeks to come. But it's a really interesting point. And before we move on to sort of chat to Tim about what some of the big news this week has been, Jess, as you say, you've been working from home 3 days a week for quite some time now. Apart from, I love that, the access to the food and drink you want. I'm trying to steer clear of hula hoops currently. But apart from that, what are your top tips as to how people can really make it work for them? Because you're obviously a seasoned pro.
I think it very much depends on the personality, obviously. And you know, doing this at this time is different for me than it is for Tim with children in the house and what have you. But in let's say an ordinary course of events, if you're working from home, you obviously do need to have a fair amount of discipline. You have to ensure that you get the work you need to do done. I think that's it won't suit everyone. But I think, you know, adopting a routine, enjoying, you know, the occasional break to watch The Mandalorian on Disney Plus, as both Tim and I have this week. Make sure that you're getting a bit of fresh air and you're getting sustenance. Actually, I tend to be more productive on the days that I'm not in the office, because you don't have as many distractions, you don't have the noises of people on calls and what have you in the office.
One of the things that we hope to do here at EG, to keep everybody feeling, you know, like they're in the routine and they're ticking over, is to keep on doing what we were doing before the world turned upside down, keep on delivering you with the news, content, analysis that we have been. It's obviously now coming to us with a slight angle, one might say, as is only to be expected. So Tim, what have been the big stories this week? How is the industry coping, and what can we expect to see next?
So the stories that have I think most clearly connected with readers this week have been around the government's introduction of a forfeiture moratorium for commercial tenants. So basically, for a three-month window, if you can't pay rent because of the impact of the COVID-19 crisis, then your landlord cannot evict you. Now, that was obviously hugely welcome news to companies that that are having to shut up shop, literally in many cases, as part of the lockdown. But it's a huge headache, of course, for landlords that in many cases have their own massive problems to deal with at the moment. Into this week, for example, said that it had received less than a third of the second quarter rents that it was due now from tenants. And so bodies like the BPF are now engaging with government to encourage new support measures for landlords. And if listeners haven't already, then they can read some more about that in this week's edition in print and online. And beyond that, look, much of the news this week has been about the impact of the crisis right across the markets. I mean, we've seen so many companies pulling dividends, either postponing them or scrapping them entirely. So instead of giving money back to shareholders, they're holding on to it for security. And depending on the size of the company and the size of the dividend, that can save them hundreds of millions of pounds in some cases. We're seeing investment deals paused. Not all, but I think a significant number. And we've seen big developers and construction companies down tools and shut sites. So there's a definite feeling, I think, in the market now. It's sad to say that things will be worse before they're better.
Worse before they're better is not a surprise to hear. I think that most people will feel that way. But I mean, let's go on in a minute to sort of talk about, you know, how people can prepare themselves for that. But I asked yesterday what the vibe was among the industry at the moment, and how people are feeling when you and your and the news team are speaking to them. How are people feeling at the moment? Is it sort of a, we can get through this spirit, or are people beginning to start, you know, starting to worry?
I think a we can get through this spirit has always been there. It's being tested. It's being tested. And I think as people realize that we're probably not close to the peak of this and the problems that it'll cause for the industry yet, then we'll see a further test of that optimism. But there are still deals being done. I mean, there is still business being done. It's not going to be business as usual for some time yet. I would say that I still sense some optimism in the market. It's slipping, and it's, people appreciate that it's going to get a lot tougher over the coming weeks, but there's still something of a can-do attitude out there, which is, you know, which is good to have at the moment.
It is indeed good to have at the moment. Jess, how are you finding people as you're talking to them this week, and is that can-do attitude something that you're also picking up on?
Obviously coronavirus has been dominating our coverage this week as well. We're having lots of people getting in touch wanting to write about it, analyze the problems that, you know, that are going to result, the difficulties for both tenants and landlords that Tim has outlined, but also we are starting to see some people submit article ideas and comment ideas that takes a slightly more positive approach to the ways that we can rebound coming out of that, and you'll see that in our legal and professional content over the coming weeks. This week I've been very, very, very busy with our content, and I've been, although I'm not quite set up with the wonderful microphone and headphone gear that Tim's boasting at the moment, I've put out two or three podcasts this week on coronavirus, as people are very much sort of keen to talk about it. I mean, if you check out our latest podcasts, we've got a sort of a rundown of the 10 big leasing questions that are around the COVID-19 crisis. We have a written piece online looking at the implications for employers, so particularly including those in the property sector on what their responsibilities are for looking after their employees, particularly whilst we're all remote working. We also have another piece online looking at the major impact being had on restaurants and bars and their landlords, and, you know, what some of the possible solutions that have been put forward by the government, and what some of the solutions that can be found between the parties through negotiation could be for helping that sector sort of rebound once we hopefully come out of this in the weeks and months to come. And there's going to be even more stuff next week. So I'm sure Tim has heard the word force majeure bandied around several times when speaking to people this week. We do have an article coming up that next week that is going to basically address the question, what is force majeure? Although I still half think we should headline it Kellest force majeure. I think that would look quite good on the site. So we'll see if I can persuade people to do that. And then I have another podcast lined up to record on Monday, where we're going to look in detail at the provisions of the Coronavirus Act, where the government has, you know, brought together all of its announcements and see what the actual terms say and what the implications of that's going to be. So it's obviously going to be dominating conversation in our area for quite a while to come, but I think people, you know, lawyers are keen to encourage a lot of collaboration and negotiation between tenants and landlords, because obviously, you know, everybody's affected. So I think the hope is that through people acting reasonably with each other, we can make the best of what is obviously going to be a very difficult situation, without hopefully too many more household names, you know, disappearing into CVAs and other people sort of, you know, experiencing major issues going forward.
I mean, I think there's some interesting stuff there that you said, but one thing I did want to pick up on actually was that you mentioned help a few times, and you mentioned a few things which made me think of the wider issue that we are also facing at the moment. And obviously the industry and the economy and business is all incredibly important, and it's at the heart of what everybody is trying to protect in their working lives. But anyone that went outside last night at 8 o'clock to clap for the NHS and RP workers will know that there is a much, much wider issue at play here. And I'm just interested to know whether either of you feel like this is going to reshape the industry in a way which sets it on a slightly different course on a wider scale, really. Obviously, you know, there is this immediate need to protect business and protect revenue, profit and everything, and make sure that when we come out the other side of this, there is still an economy and there is still a business to continue with. But there's been so much requirement for people to think differently, act differently, do better, be better. Do you think that real estate will follow in that vein, Tim?
I hope so. And that's a topic that I tried to pick up on in my leader column for this week's edition, because I think we talk a lot about real estate doing good as well as just doing good business, and the positive impact that companies can have on communities that they're working in and the world around them. And it feels like in a situation like this crisis at the moment, that so few of us have ever gone through anything like, there's a real time for that to shine. In the piece I wrote this week, I sort of picked up an analogy around superheroes that Sam McClary made in one of her columns earlier in the year, where she said she wanted this to be the year that the industry showed its superhero credentials. And it doesn't feel like there's ever been a better time for it to do that. And hopefully, as you say, to maintain some of the changes that it makes now for the better, even beyond this crisis, once it passes. And I think we're already seeing loads of examples of businesses that that are responding to this in a thinking and a compassionate way. I mean, one that I flagged up was CBRE, which is doing pro bono work to help find unused properties that could be temporarily used by the NHS. And you then contrast that with, you know, it's sad to say, some companies that are almost showing themselves in a different light here at the moment. And I singled out Wetherspoons in that in that piece. And full disclosure, I say this as someone who's enjoyed many a happy evening in a Spoons. But if you look at the public reaction when that company suggested that it was going to stop paying staff, and Tim Martin put out a video in which he said that they could all just go and look for jobs in Tesco instead. And I appreciate they've rowed back from that decision now. But the uproar that something like that causes, I think is remembered. I think the world is watching how we behave at this time. And if we shift the way that we do business, and we prioritize differently, and we help more, then I think, first of all, that will be remembered. And secondly, it'll become the more natural way for us to be doing business. I'd hope that this does set the industry on a slightly different course. I think we've talked a lot, as I say, about the good that can be done by this industry. I think when it hits the fan like this, to use a euphemism, I think that's when you can put that talk into action. And hopefully it won't be something that only happens while we're working our way through this. Hopefully it sets us on a new course afterwards.
Thank you very much. Jess, your thoughts on that? And as somebody who I know, well, I've seen on these Microsoft Teams calls wearing, I don't know whether it was a full onesie, but certainly superhero jumpers, T-shirts and everything else. I'm sure the superhero analogy will be one that you very much enjoy.
It absolutely was. So I did wear an Iron Man onesie to our team meeting last Friday. Tim, I should note, is wearing a Guardians of the Galaxy T-shirt as we speak. So he's definitely
embracing. I'll tweet a picture afterwards.
He's definitely embracing the superhero analogy. Yeah, I think you mentioned, Emily, the applause for the NHS last night, which was, you know, something that is solely the result of social media. I think one of the other things that we're seeing during this crisis is that another aspect that is being widely discussed on social media are the businesses that are doing good things and the businesses that are doing not so good things. I mean, Tim mentioned Wetherspoons as what, you know, one example of where the public reaction to the company's reaction has been quite negative. And that has, you know, prompted changing behaviour from some people in industry. And I think, you know, it's showing that there is real power there, particularly in, you know, younger generations, to react to what companies are doing. So I think we're used to featuring on our pages how the property sector can lead the way in sustainability and in tech and in all kinds of things. And I think those property companies that take the lead on this, that adopt a positive approach to bringing us out of this crisis when the time comes for us to be able to do so, I think they will, their praises will be sung on social media. And those that take a different approach, you know, they will bear the brunt of criticism on that. And it could well be that increasingly social media reputation in times like this is going to have an impact on profits down the line, because people will remember, and memes will carry on getting shared long after the lockdown is over.
Yes, never underestimate the power of a meme. And I think that, you know, what is encouraging is not only that companies or individuals are either being held to account or praised for the decisions they make, but it seems from public reaction that the gauge is about right, which is good. And in the same way that we saw, certainly here where I live, everybody coming out last night, you know, it's because sometimes you can start to think that maybe, you know, people's moral compasses, or just, you know, if you hear enough bad news and you start feeling really quite depressed. And I think that it was really important, of course, first and foremost for the NHS and key workers, but also for all of us to realise, no, actually, not only are we all in this together, but we are all grateful and we are all appreciative. And that in itself is quite a reassuring state to find yourself in. So hopefully it was as uplifting for other people as it was for us here. And hopefully those messages from Tim and Jess as well are also going to resonate with people and be uplifting. And it is the time to make the right decisions, both your business, but beyond, and, you know, how you want to be seen. And as Jess pointed out, more and more people aren't going to be able to escape that public opinion, and doing the right thing is important. You'd hope that everybody would want to do the right thing for themselves, but if not, then do it for public opinion. So thank you so much for both joining me on the second We're Still Here podcast. We've had, people won't know this because I'll edit it, but we've had two deliveries, I think, one door knock and a building site kicking into action over the road during this. And I think we've navigated it really well. If I hadn't just mentioned it, no one would know. But that is what happens when you're all working from home. So Jess and Tim, thank you so much for joining me. And I hope you all join me next week for our third We're Still Here podcast.